Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 1st. I'm Ray Graff. In the market for a new home, or do you plan on putting your property up for sale? On today's show, we discuss home buying and selling with Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District and home inspections with expert David Andrick, owner of A1 Home Inspection Services. You got a question about the whole buying and selling thing? Maybe you need a little advice? Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. The number is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis and David Andrick, your real estate calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you buying or selling a home or residential property? Do you need a home inspection? Maybe you're not sure what to look for? We have experts in the studio. Well, not really in the studio. On the line to answer your questions. Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District is here and a familiar voice on this program. And a newcomer, home inspection expert David Andrick. Renata is with Keller Williams Capital District and also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She is a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. David Andrick is the owner of A1 Home Inspection Services, and he is known as the Sherlock of Homes. He's licensed in New York State and Connecticut and has been in the business in the Hudson Valley for 19 years. Our number here, if you have a question about buying or selling or inspecting a home, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Let's start with that familiar voice. Renata Lewis, my friend, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Ray? Thanks for having me again.
Well, great to have you here. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving.
I did. And you?
Pretty good. Not too bad, except for the turkey-related injury, which I detailed in yesterday's physical therapy program. But let's not go into that right now. Is this now the time when that spring real estate season kicks in?
People think spring. They think, March, April, May. Pending home sales are outpacing last year's numbers already. And, the biggest struggle still is the lack of inventory. So we're having a lot of conversations with many of our clients saying, if you're thinking about selling, let's start the process, because now is still a really great time to put the house on the market. And if December holidays are not in the best favor, let's talk about January for sure.
So this is really still a seller's market.
It is. That's what we're still experiencing for sure.
Now, the newcomer, and maybe Renata, you have dealt with this person before. David Andrick is the owner of A1 Home Inspection Services. I hope you don't mind, David. I probably won't call you Sherlock during the program. Is that all right with you?
Quite all right, Ray.
Hey, great to have you here. And we every now and then on this program, maybe once a show, someone will call in with a specific question about inspections, and Renata and Alex Monticello, who's often on here as real estate buyers and sellers, they know quite a bit about it. But we thought it would be a good idea to have an inspector on. And Renata, have you dealt with this guy before?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So there's no animosity. Everything's good.
No. He sounds terrific.
David, tell us, just take us through, before we get into this further, sort of the checklist you go through when you inspect a home.
Sure, Ray. I do the whole house, and a lot of people sometimes, especially first-time home buyers, want to know what you're going to be covering as far as a home inspector. So while I do a lot of upfront disclosure of what I'll be doing, it basically gets down to everything from the roof to the foundation, the major systems like heating, hot water, AC, the major appliances, the structural. And also, I'm being on the lookout for things like pests, like termites, carpet ants, and vermin. And also do the necessary environmental tests. Like, most people want to know what the radon levels are in the house as far as the gas levels.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know if it's a private well, if the water's potable or not. And if they have a septic, if the dye test, while it may be limited, will perk out into the yard, constituting a failure or not. So those are basically the areas I cover. Now, you know, lately a lot of people are emotionally concerned about things like mold, lead, and asbestos. And while I'm always on the lookout for those possibilities at inspection, I try to keep a perspective on it. If it does come up as a major concern, there's always ways to deal with it.
Now, some of these, I assume, are required by law. Are some of the things, like our radon tests, for instance, are they required by law when you are selling a home?
It really depends upon the lender. But, for example, if it's a VA-backed mortgage buyer, it is required to not only be tested, but the radon test levels have to pass in order for the buyer to purchase a house with a VA mortgage. Otherwise, I look at it as a cholesterol test for the house. Everyone should know what their radon levels are in the house moving forward, because if you're a buyer going into a purchase and the levels need to be corrected, the systems to put in place permanently, which you never turn off, can be expensive, as high as $1,400 these days.
Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District, you deal with inspectors all the time. In your capacity as a seller or a buyer. And as I understand the process, and of course I don't know that much about it, but there is sort of a blind list. And when there is a sale going to go through, that inspector is selected sort of at random, right?
Correct. I mean, there's always, you know, us as agents, you know, we have vendors that we have successfully worked with in the past that our clients like working and enjoy working with. You know, so we can, you know, absolutely offer some recommendations. However, yes, it's at the, you know, it's the seller's or the buyer's time and, you know, just research to find who they're comfortable with and to make sure that inspection is completed. As David said, you know, we are kind of bound by some government-funded loans as far as what's mandated. Mm-hmm. But typically, we're doing a structural inspection, we're doing a pest inspection, and we're doing a radon inspection as the top three normal standard inspections.
Right.
When we get to the rural areas, that's when the septic would kick in. And, you know, well, if necessary, and obviously molds, you know, crazy pests. You know, owls or bats in the attic. You know, those are the things that the inspectors will know and possibly, you know, write up if needed.
And what happens if an inspector says, oh, yeah, well, you know, Renata, there are owls up there in that attic, or there were once? Then do you go back and say, if you're the buying agent, and say, hey, listen, you got to knock off a little money on the sale price?
So, you know, the expectation is that the home inspection shouldn't be another time to negotiate unless it's necessary. So, yeah, if it is so in New York State, there's a $1,500 threshold when it comes to inspections, mm-hmm. meaning that if an item is called out that could be a possible major, that is going to cost $1,500 to remediate, to fix, to repair, or to replace. It can come back to the table. And at that point is when we get the professionals in to give us an estimate to see what the resolution and a possible, you know, budget to take care of that situation will be. So the inspector really is somebody that is, you know, does a whole scope of the entire house and his analysis. And then we get the professionals to kick in as needed, whether it's HVAC or pest or, you know, contractors for any structural issues. Those people will come in at that point.
It is Real Estate Today, and we're joined by Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District, also home inspection expert David Andrick of A1 Home Inspection Services. We had a little problem with the phone yesterday. The phone lines went completely south as the opening theme was going. And it took some time to get back, but we got the show back on track. Now, today, David Andrick has come and gone several times while you and I were chatting. So why don't we take a break here, do some underwriting, and we'll see if we get some questions here on the line, and we'll try to get David Andrick back as well. Renata Lewis is here. It's Real Estate. If you have a question, give us a call. We'll spin the wheel. 800-348-2551. always fun to have game show music when you're playing Spin the Wheel of Phones here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 if you'd like to try your luck with a question today. It's real estate. Renata Lewis is here, and occasionally David Andrick of A1 Home Inspection Services also here. Hey, one quick email here while we're waiting for the lines to load up. Renata, this is from Larry in Albany. He says, what are the best ways to increase a home's market value, like kitchen upgrade, bathroom upgrade, addition, new siding, et cetera?
So, yeah, that's right on the mark. So, the kitchen and bath sell, that's what's always been. So, absolutely, if you put a little money into a kitchen or a bath, that will definitely increase the value. Be careful what you do. If you throw in a $100,000 kitchen and you want to sell in 1 year, you're not going to get $100,000 back. So sometimes a mediocre, update or an improvement in the kitchen is your best bet, depending on how quickly you're selling. I always say the roof, the systems, flooring, windows, all play a big factor in, what the buyers are looking for today and how we can adjust and improve that value to maximize the bottom line.
Interesting. So, really, it's kind of a balancing act. I mean, if you're planning to sell, there is a point where you are there a point of diminishing returns, right, as far as dumping money in. You won't get all of that back.
Absolutely. Why are you doing it? Are you doing it to sell in the next year? Or are you doing it because you just purchased the home and you want to improve the home for your own enjoyment and at the same time improve the value?
Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We're joined by Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District. And I think David Andrick of A1 Home Inspection Services is back. Are you on the line, sir?
I am, Ray. Yeah.
Good. Nice to have you here. Before we get to the phones, just if maybe you could just give us, without naming names or locations, the craziest thing you found on an inspection that blew your mind.
There are so many, but I don't know which top's the other one, but I once pulled a cover off electrical breaker panel on an inspection. And I jumped back a little bit, and my client who was behind me jumped back farther than I did because I didn't know if what was inside was still alive. But it was about a 4 to 5 foot long garter snake that had found its way inside the electrical panel, became electrocuted, wasn't dead long because it was still, relatively alive, but I didn't know if it was alive or not or what it was. So that was interesting.
So it was a fresh grilled snake is what you're saying. That should increase the value of the home.
Right, exactly. I understand if it might taste like chicken.
Exactly. We're joined today by... Go ahead, Renata.
No, I just said ew.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had a similar story, and it was basically, it was a farmhouse. So it was a pretty rural area, and my client was in the attic with the inspector. And I've never seen anybody run so fast out of the house. So I ran after my client. I said, what's going on? And they did find a really large snakes and old snake skins in the attic.
Oh.
So needless to say, he ends up pulling out of the contract because he was so fearful of snakes. But that was probably the craziest inspection I've had.
It doesn't seem like it would be tough to get rid of snakes. I mean, maybe if you really freak out, you get the seller to knock a few grand off, right?
We probably could have, and somebody could have gone in there and make sure that they removed all the snakes and it was safe. But again, it was just one of those things where there was a big fear, and he was a single dad, and he wanted nothing to do with that.
Fair enough.
So that's what happened.
All right. By the way, David, have you ever found there's a little mound in the dirt basement, and you dig it up, and there's a body down there or anything?
No, but I once found a mound of bat droppings outside of a house on the ground about 8 inches high. And then when I went inside the house in the attic above me, there were at least 4 bats roosting for the day. And on the other end by the chimney where they're coming and going, there was about 2 dozen more bats with another 1/2 foot of bat guano.
Wow.
Over there. So that was...
Must be. See, you must wash your hands very well when you get home. Hey, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. Aslam in Latham, you're on.
Yes, I am looking for a, I'm looking into a house, and when I went to see that, I saw in the living room there was some condensation where the bulbs are, and there's a metal, metal thing attached, and then the bulb goes in. From the metal, there was some condensation was coming. I was wondering, is it a roof problem, or is it just because of winter?
Okay, I'm not sure. Do you guys know what he's talking about as far as the metal thing? I'm trying to not. You're not talking about a radiator.
It's housing metal.
Okay.
You put a housing, then you put.
Okay. Well, let's ask David.
The hole.
Yeah. Well, if it's on the inside of the house, which wouldn't be typical, it's usually associated with low-quality vinyl-clad windows that can sweat around the frame and so forth. But something metal on the inside doesn't ring a bell. You can get ice damming, but we haven't had snow or ice yet.
Go ahead, Aslam.
No, when you put the electric, you make a hole in the ceiling, and then you put the metal thing.
Yeah.
Just to cover the...
Like a conduit.
It's a cosmetic
like a
thing, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to cover the hole, and then you put the bulb.
I think he's talking about the recessed lighting.
Oh, okay. So water's coming from the recessed lighting. All right. Well, what do you think, team?
Probably could be related to a active leak in the attic. Could be a bathroom venting into the attic. It could be an active roof leak. It could be flashing related, any number of things, but if it's definitely condensing, it also could be lack of ventilation and insulation. So any number of things could be in the picture.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead, Renata.
I was going to say, was it on the first floor or the second floor? If it's on the first floor, is there a bathroom on top of it? Mm. There could be, a bathroom leak, a plumbing leak.
Yeah. I remember that years ago we had a leak in the upstairs bathroom and, all of a sudden, I saw water coming down from our kitchen light, and that's when I knew it was time to call the professionals. Let's go to Carol in Bern. Carol, you're on.
Hi. I'm wondering, I have a friend who was buying a house, and the water came back as surface water in the well, negative E. coli.
Okay.
So if it was negative E. coli, that's a good thing. However, if it was positive coliform bacteria, that's not a good thing, but correctable.
Go ahead, Carol.
I'm sorry, I missed your first part of the answer.
David?
If E. coli did not come back, that's good. However, if the other bacteria that we test for, coliform, came back positive, well, it's a cousin to E. coli, it's naturally occurring and easily corrected by either shocking the well with bleach and retesting and maybe getting a passing result, or go right to a ultraviolet or UV light installation and retesting, and that'll take care of both coliform and E. coli permanently.
So coliform is the surface water?
It's earthborne. It has a number of sources. You can't see it or smell it, but one part per million of coliform in New York State fails the water test. So people living in a house and that they sell it and they have a test done, they don't know they have coliform in it until the test results come back positive, but it is easily correctable.
Okay. And someone had also mentioned that maybe there's a cap or the casing needs to be checked out by a well guy.
I have had situations where the cap is missing a chunk out of it or a nylon plug. Or if it's a split ring cap with a O-ring, or if the cap is actually loose and I can go over and pick it up off the wellhead, or if it's an older home with a wellhead below grade down in the pit, or it's buried below grade on a pre-typically 1970s home, those can predispose a drilled well to have coliform bacteria come back positive. Or non-use of the house, no one's been living in the house for a number of months or years. That's also a possible source.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Carol, thanks a lot for the call. We're joined today by David Andrick of A1 Home Inspection Services and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District. It's Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. Nate in Gloversville. Nate, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I am a contractor, but I've got an old restaurant that I'm fixing up to sell, and I have a couple that wants to buy it, but they're looking to get a VA loan. So the upstairs is a 4-bedroom apartment. The downstairs used to be a restaurant, but it's just all clear now. And I'm trying to figure out how to get it to be less than 25% commercial. It's zoned commercial / residential. So I think I've got to have an assessment to see if it's how much of it's commercial, how much of it's residential.
Renata.
Yes, that is correct. So I was just going to ask you what percentage of that, of the entire building is commercial. So that's a big one because, again, a government-funded loan, we're dealing with a lot of specific guidelines. And so your best bet would be to try to maybe make a bedroom out of there or make it look like it's a living area. Does the commercial part have a bathroom in it?
Yes.
And plumbing for one? It does?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe speak to an appraiser that does commercial properties or even a residential appraiser just to see how they would appraise it and best ways for you to prepare it so it passes the VA loan. It's a tricky one. Uh-huh. I mean, there's a lot of gray areas in it. It really is. I wish I could be more help.
Yeah, there's a lot of open space, where it used to be a kitchen and stuff like that. But I was thinking if I just divided it into bedrooms and put a closet in each one, like that might kind of cover it right there.
Yeah, I think that would be good. So the kitchen, all the appliances, everything has been pulled out, correct?
Yep. No, it's just a blank room, really. That's all it is.
Yeah. I guess the big question would be just the zoning itself. If they do see a commercial zoning, how will they react to that? And what the VA is actually looking for. So maybe they could ask their VA lender for help and, kind of say, hey, behind the scenes, this is what we're dealing with. What can we do to make this work so you guys are happy with the assessment of the building?
I think it sounds like it would help to have somebody come and look at it specifically and kind of give me a direction here then.
Hmm. Yeah, definitely. And again, it's the buyers are the ones that are working with the lender. So if, they could question that and see what they're specifically looking for or what they don't want to see, just so when that appraiser comes in, they're not red flagging any of that.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks,
You're
Nick.
Welcome. Good luck.
Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Renata Lewis is here from Keller Williams Capital District. We're also joined for the first time by David Andrick of A1 Home Inspection Services. Where are you guys, in Statsburg?
That's correct, just below Rhinebeck.
Ah, okay. And you've been down there a while, right?
Quite a few years, going on total of 30.
That's great. So this is really nice to have a home inspector on the show. We have talked about this over the years. This email came in from Eva, and I'm not sure exactly what it's referring to, but maybe Renata will know the answer to this one. Eva writes, I was wondering if there are different kinds of guidelines for selling a home over $800,000. Are there books about this? And that's from Eva.
I guess the only thing I can think of would be financing. If somebody wants to mortgage a home that's over $500,000, I believe the limits just went up to the jumbo loan is, I think, 545, but please don't quote me on that.
Okay.
So somebody would have to come down with a lot more money to purchase a luxury home. So really the only guideline I can think of would be just financing end.
All right.
Otherwise, obviously, just working with a luxury agent that knows the market. We market the luxury homes very differently, different websites, different pool of buyers and agents that we make sure that we expose that property to when it does hit the market.
Okay, this one's from Virginia, and Renata, we'll go to you first, but I think that David might be able to chime in on this one. Virginia writes, I plan to sell my house in the next 1 to 2 years. I'm due for a new roof, although there is no problem at this time with the roof, just old. Should I get a new roof just to sell the house or just take my loss when selling? Everything else is updated. And that's from Virginia. Renata, you first.
All right, so a couple things here. Again, if there is a government-funded loan that's going to become the mortgage lender on this, they're going to want to see at least 3 years of life expectancy on that roof. And how do they know what that is? That's when the inspector would come in and, you know, we would ask the inspector, hey, do we have at least 3 years life left on this roof? And will you put something in writing to justify that?
All right.
So really, the government-funded loans would come into play. So it depends on the price point. Anything over $300,000 probably will not be a government-funded loan. However, the VA loans are becoming a little bit more into play into this local area. So it could be an issue. Other than that, it really would just be pricing. You know, we would factor in the price of a new roof and adjust the price accordingly, just so you wouldn't get further negotiations, you know, once inspections come into play. And I would market the roof as is at that point, but just make sure that there truly isn't any leaks, that there truly isn't any structural deficiencies, so you don't get double whammied on this during the inspection end.
Well, speaking of the inspection, and David Andrick, it seems to me, just hearing Renata describe it, that saying, okay, this has 3 years left, is a fairly subjective thing. In other words, it's not like looking at a tire where they say, okay, you have at least a quarter inch of tread on this. Or is it like that? I mean, is there an objective way to quantify, oh, yeah, you got 3 years left on this?
Well, Ray, I've never put a life expectancy year rating on any roof, and I don't think you have a roofer out there that would want to put their liability potential risk on that. You can't really look at a roof and say, well, it has X number of years left on it. What I prefer to do, and I've always done, is say what stage of the roof its life is in currently, early, middle, late, and beyond end. And obviously with a car coming in, you don't want to wait till the roof starts to leak to do something about it, because then you're really behind the check writing eight ball. And, you know, there's other factors involved. There's how many layers of roof going on, the decking on inside, flashing issues could be a problem. But I think the takeaway here is that when you're ready to market the home, I've been preaching this for years, have a pre-listing home inspection done so you can do several things. Have things pointed out that you want to take care of financially before you actually put it on the market, and separate your house from other ones that might be in competition. You'll have the pre-inspected home to market with your broker rather than just another, say, Ray's Ranch that's like 30, 40 years old with a roof that's old.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. Renata Lewis is here from Keller Williams Capital District, and David Andrick of A1 Home Inspection Services. Our number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Real Estate Today with David Andrick and Renata Lewis. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a question, or you can email us at voxpopwamc.org. And this email sort of dovetails with the last one we talked about. This is from David in Kingston. David says, we have a few loose shingles on the north part of our main roof. Can you talk about the pros and cons of adding a new layer of shingles versus stripping the old and replacing, or doing a patch repair job? I guess, David, you go first.
You could always have it possibly repaired, but as you can imagine, most roofers, given a choice of repairing or replacing, would probably lean toward the side of replacing if it's prudent to do so. If the house in question has two layers already, a full inspection of a limited scope of the roof could be done by any home inspector, potentially, and assess what's really going on. If it's one layer roofing and they've a few loose shingles have been blown away, or they became loose because of the way they originally were fastened, and it's not too old of a shingle, you can usually find newer shingles that you can have it repaired by a qualified roofing contractor. Otherwise, if the roof has over two layers of shingles already, that's really a dangerous situation. It should be dealt with. Tear it down to the roof decking and start over.
But why is that dangerous, David?
It's the weight load. General construction standards in New York State, or in general state, two layers maximum. Have I seen as many as five layers? Yes.
And the house was still standing. Renata, you agree with all that?
I do. And again, just, you know, for lender purposes, it seems like an appraiser or an inspector may flag if there is five shingles missing or more. So, you know, we just want to make sure that the shingles are in place and the roof looks intact to eliminate any concerns or anything to be red flagged, for sure.
Our number here on Vox Pop is 800-348-2551. It's Real Estate Today with Renata Lewis and David Andrick. And Kendall is in Irving, Massachusetts. Kendall, you're on.
Hi there. My fiancé and I are in the process of purchasing a house right now. And during the initial inspection, the inspector pointed out that there was some termite damage pre-existing to the sill plate in the basement. The sellers agreed to repair that prior to our closing, and it seems like they had a pest control company repair the sill plate, not by replacing the sill, but by joining it with a new sill. And I'm wondering if that's something that they should have pulled a permit for, because it doesn't appear that they did.
That typically would not be something that a permit would be pulled for, however, municipalities vary. Taking out the destroyed wood and putting in new pressure treated typically would be the repair in a situation. Equally important, you want to find out if the pest control company that was involved suggested a treatment program. Because if they were active once and now they're dormant, they could come back again and start up the party, so to speak. If they were being treated and they let the treatment lapse and then the termites came and destroyed the sill area, you know, that's another scenario that can take place. But as long as it was repaired, and you could bring the inspector back in to inspect the work done if you don't feel the seller has hired the better contractor or you just question the process, that's something I'm brought back in occasionally to inspect someone's repair of work, because I obviously represent the buyers typically, but that, you know, that's something also not to rule out.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Real Estate Today with Renata Lewis and David Andrick. And Sharon in Saratoga Springs. Sharon, you're on.
Hello. So my question, I don't really know if you guys, this is a good question for you or not, but we're interested in building a home years from now when we retire. And do you have any recommendations of things to be aware of, like the difficulty in getting a loan for new construction, things to look out for, like with the property, anything like that? Does that sound like?
I bet Renata has an answer for you, Renata.
Cool.
There's a lot of pieces to that. So, you know, if you're going to buy land by itself, you're going to, very few lenders will actually finance a piece of land. So it's typically a cash purchase.
Why, Renata?
It's a good question. I mean, a lot of land, I mean, unless it's a $500,000 piece of land, you know, most land is a little bit less money, and I guess the financing end just doesn't make sense. And there really isn't a structure on that. So there is, you know what? I don't know how to answer that, to be honest.
All right, I'll let you go on then.
I'll have to research, and next time we go on, I'll let you know.
Cool.
But basically, the financing is just not available for that. If you could tie the new construction and the land together, then there are a few banks that will finance the entire, they'll help kind of prorate to pay for the land, and then they will two installments on the new construction or a balloon payment on the new construction. So just really doing some research on the financing part of it, if it's not a cash deal, is important. Obviously, doing your due diligence and speaking with a bunch of builders to make sure that you're comfortable with the builder that you're going to be working with, the type of project that they're going to undertake. You know, what aspects of the projects will they help you with? Permits, blueprints, easements, you know, going to the town and making sure that everything aligns the way you want it to. You know, taxes obviously come into play, areas, school districts. So there is just a lot of different pieces that you should do some homework on before you jump and make that decision.
And so if you, I think what you were saying is that maybe if you secure, say, a modular home and you have that all set and you know what you want and, I don't know, maybe you've got the loan for that, that you'd be more likely to be able to lump that together with the land purchase?
Possibly, yeah. So modular is also a little bit of different financing. So again, just speaking to a lender to see if they would lump both of those together based on that situation. So there's some banks that will work with you. They think outside the box. There's other banks that will not. So again,
they don't
like
modulars, even though they're fine quality.
Yeah, what's wrong with modular homes?
Not like a trailer.
They're much better. They're much better. It's like, where is it coming from? How many pieces is it coming in? Is it going to be put together? So they get very particular on the construction end of it, if it's coming in one piece, if it's still going to need to be built and put together. And then, obviously, are you putting a basement on? Are you just doing it on slabs?
Yeah.
Water, electric, utilities, you know, all of that comes into play. How far, you know, where's the setback? How far do you have to bring the utilities in? You know, people like to set their houses away from the road, but they don't think how expensive it is to bring the utilities in and put in a driveway in. So just really kind of, you know, trying to build the big picture and figuring out what number that's going to be, and then maybe pulling back on some pieces just to make sure that you stay within budget and you're happy with the final outcome.
Nice. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Sharon. Thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Real Estate Today with Renata Lewis and David Andrick, and Gerard is in Myland. Gerard.
Yes, good afternoon. It's great to speak to somebody who knows something about real estate. Can you hear me okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ray. My favorite novel has been A Tale of Two Cities, a fine book. And I'd like to know if any of your guests would be able to give me an in-depth analysis of the character of Sidney Carton, the insolent alcoholic attorney who works with Mr. Stryver. I'm going to stop right now. I'm going to take my answer off the air. Thank you so very much for listening.
Gerard, happy Thanksgiving, and we appreciate you checking in on the program. It's always fun to have you on the show. Let's go to Adam in Altamont. Adam, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. I have a question about home inspections.
Yeah.
I know most people get their homes inspected only when they're ready to sell and the buyer arranges for the inspection. But for preventive maintenance concerns, is it a good idea to get your home inspected on a regular basis? And if so, what kind of time frame are we talking about?
David.
That's a great question. I tout annual house doctor checkups. I mean, let's face it, we all go to our doctor for an annual physical to find out what state we're in. And why not do that for the home you're living in if you're not going to move anytime soon? Stay ahead of the check writing curve. Bring someone like myself in once a year. Even if I find nothing, it's money well spent. If you have a well, you want to do an annual well water checkup. It's to find out the potability. If you've completed a basement area to new living space, maybe do a new radon test because the house is tighter now. But, once a year house doctor checkup, I'm all for it.
Beautiful. Thanks a lot. That's really good advice.
Thanks a lot, Adam. We appreciate the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Renata, if you want to weigh in on A Tale of Two Cities, go ahead, go right ahead.
Can I plead the fifth?
You betcha. We'll move right on. Mike in Kerhonkson. Mike, you're on. Hello, Mike. How you doing, Mike?
I think we lost Mike.
So, hey, Ray, I got an answer. I just texted one of my lenders. I'm like, why will a lender not finance land?
Yeah.
And the easy answer is they don't want to own it.
Oh, I see. I see. But, I mean, that doesn't, right, to me, that doesn't make sense because you can get land fairly cheap, and a lot of times it goes up, 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 right?
Well, you know, the appreciation on land is not as much as possibly on a home, and the financing is probably not as much, so they're not making enough money.
All right. Fair enough. Let's go now to Sally in Albany. Sally, hello.
Hello. I'm calling because I need to replace my deck, and I'm wondering, I understand there are materials that can be used that are better than treated wood, which is what my old deck was made of, but it's pretty old now. It's about 18 years old, and I'd like to replace it with something that's not so easily destructible or,
yeah,
you know,
longer lasting,
whatever. And yes, yeah, something that would last longer. And I'd like to know how to find somebody to do that, as well as what kind of materials they would recommend.
Now, our guests might have an answer for you. This would be a better one on our home improvement show, which we do from time to time, but we will throw this out to our guests. Meantime, if you could turn that radio down, Sally, that would be great. And now, why don't we throw this one first to David Andrick and see what you have in mind?
So, pressure-treated decks don't last forever, and finding pressure-treated nowadays is a real challenge because of the crazy construction boom and renovation climate we're in. But there are other options. You can consider Trex, which is a brand name of composite man-made decking. There's also a hardwood type of IPE decking that is readily available. And, you know, don't rule out changing your railing and step system to do, like a lot of people are doing, the metal post with stainless steel horizontal cables. Especially if your deck overlooks a great view shed. I'm sure Renata will agree. Improve that view shed if you have one by going with a whole different look and opening it right up, but keeping it safe and keeping it to code is always important.
Renata.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, 100%.
All right.
And, so, you know, it makes it a little bit more maintenance-free as well, so they last much longer and less maintenance. You don't have to, you know, treat it, you don't have to seal it, and all that good stuff.
Quickly now, we only have about 4 minutes here. Let's go to Dylan in Rome, New York. Dylan, you're on.
Hi, thanks for having me. I had a question about a furnace. I recently purchased a home, and I turned the furnace on for the first time yesterday, and it's broken. I was curious if the seller could be held responsible for damages.
Oh, boy. Who wants that one?
Yeah, that's a tough one. So when you did your final walkthrough before you closed, did you check that furnace and did it kick on at that point?
Yes, it was kicked on and the blower was continually blowing. I believe it was rigged just to pass the inspection.
Hmm.
Well, so, the condition,
Go ahead.
Well, the conditions for the furnace major system is only reflected the day of the inspection. Things can change between the time of inspection and closing. If it was an older furnace, maybe on its way out, because they're only usually rated for like 20 years, if it is a furnace versus a boiler, that could be a possibility. Maybe it was overdue for a service and the sellers didn't have the money to do it, and maybe it just shut down, maybe needs a new filter or just a service call to get it back running. Before ruling out replacing the furnace, at least have an HVAC tech in there to kind of give the bigger picture.
And sometimes, Dylan, those things, I mean, you don't want to do it yourself until you know what you're doing. But, I mean, a lot of times it's a thermocoupler, which is like an $8 part, and the thing starts right up. Having had an old Utica boiler for a long, long time until very recently, I'm pretty familiar with the fact that sometimes they're pretty easy to fix, but don't do it yourself. You know what I mean?
I was just going to say, sounds like you're familiar with it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it was a Utica boiler, and our caller was from Rome. So there you are.
There you go. Nice.
Let's go to Janet in Old Chatham. Janet, you're on.
Hi, I'm a real estate agent in Hudson with the Kinderhook Group, and I'm just responding to the buyer of the land. The one thing that wasn't mentioned, and probably the very first thing that somebody who's buying land should consider, is doing a PERC test and getting Board of Health approval to make sure that you can put in a septic and a well and that the land is going to drain.
Mm. I think it's a good point. Right. I think you did mention that, and we have brought that up in the past. Renata, go ahead.
Right. Well, yeah, if you have public utilities, you don't have to do that. If there is no public utilities, yeah, for sure. So we mentioned just making sure that all the utilities are brought in, you know, where they need to be placed. And, you know, PERC test is very important, whether it's going to be an above ground septic system or a below ground septic system, and, you know, the type of soil that you're working with and all that good stuff. So, and as you know, as far as drilling well, you know, good luck. Find out from others and just somebody that knows the area, you know, it may be very hard to find water. So very important that you do some due diligence on your end to make sure that, you know, it's feasible to drill and get some water, because you could spend a lot of money drilling several wells and not being successful in tapping into good water source.
We only have about 5 seconds here, but go ahead, David.
If I could chime in. Also, too, don't rule out the history of the land and adjacent land. You know, was it a nearby transfer station one time or active agricultural land adjacent to the subject property?
Yeah.
And things of that nature.
Well, we are done. Renata Lewis, thank you so much. Have a wonderful holiday season. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you so much, everybody. Have a happy and safe holiday season.
You do the same. David Andrick, thanks for being here on your first attempt. Are you, I don't know, was it traumatizing for you?
No, actually, I really had an enjoyable time, Ray. I appreciate the opportunity.
Terrific. Well, thank you both. Support comes from Grapes on Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 20 years. Stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins, grapesandgrainswine.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. HikeLakeGeorge.org. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting color, light, and atmosphere, rarely exhibited paintings, including work by Grandma Moses, N.C. Wyeth, Whistler, and Innes, through December 30th, ArkellMuseum.org. And Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts, locally sourced comfort food, wine, and cocktails, offering socially distant dining indoors and out, Thursday through Sunday from 4 to 9, ChesterCommonTable.com. Hey, thanks all for listening today. Thanks to Renata and David for being here. An exciting show tomorrow, Weather with Jason Goff at 2 p.m. Stand by now for the book show.